Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and you might want to get on the line now if you want to talk with Dr. Francis Beckwith this hour from Baylor University. We're going to talk about church and state and religious liberty and all these things. And you know, with the recent Supreme Court decisions and all this, that's going on here in the United States, where we have very clearly expressed religious rights and rights to free expression, more clearly probably than they are expressed anywhere else in the world in our Constitution, and we're struggling over this. And if you've got questions about it, if you've got questions about what the church teaches about it, questions about how to live what the church teaches in a society that's having these kinds of struggles, 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. Tomorrow, I just want to let you know, before we bring Dr. Beckwith on, that tomorrow we have a 4th of July show for you. It's 4th of July weekend. I'm going to just say we're in the 4th of July weekend right now because the traffic would suggest I was the only one that went to work today. So I think the rest of you are all off today. And if you're off, I want you to know we've got a 4th of July show for you, and it's a good 4th of July show. The second hour tomorrow, we'll have Deacon Stephen Gradanis back with us from Decent Films, and we're going to review the summer movies. And he's got some things to say about the new Indiana Jones movie that are just amazing. He has wonderful insight into films from the Catholic perspective. So join us for the second hour for Deacon Stephen Gradanis. And then first hour, we welcome a bishop of an archdiocese with which you might be familiar, which you might not, the United States military, as its own archdiocese, because there are millions of people in the United States military. It stretches all around the world. It's the largest, geographically, diocese in the world. And Deacon Joseph Coffey, who's one of the bishops, an auxiliary bishop in the Archdiocese for the Military Services, will be here with us, and he's going to talk about what it's like to be in the military right now. He's going to talk about what it's like to be a chaplain in the military, why men should consider being chaplains in the military, but he'll also give us some reflections on patriotism in this time of difficulty and on ways that we can support both those who are in the service of our country right now, in the military service of our country right now, and those who are veterans. So we didn't lay down on the job. We put together a pretty darn good 4th of July program for you, and we'll have brand new programming each day this week. We're not going to we're going to shirk our job. Brand new programming each day this week. Again, the number here is 888-318-7884. Our guest is Dr. Francis Beckwith, who teaches at Baylor University, prolific author, and he'll be among the featured speakers at our Catholic Answers Conference this September. Dr. Beckwith, thank you so much for being here with us.
Great. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I want to start by asking you about the Supreme Court decision that came down on gay marriage in the United States now, which was an issue that the courts settled. It wasn't settled by the voters, but the courts decided it. And we're a very civil society, so we all go along with what the courts tell us we got to go along with. Mm. But then there are people who say, yeah, okay, I get it. That's the law of the land now. But I don't want to participate in a way that compromises my religious or moral beliefs in gay weddings. So there's the case that was decided in favor of, and she is constantly referred to everywhere in the media as a Christian website designer, because they want to make clear that this is a conflict that Christians have. I think often they're attempting to make it a conflict over the lifestyle of gay people and not about the religion of the person who is objecting. But she won, and the commentary is, well, I mean, the sky is falling. This is using the First Amendment to back up bigotry and all of that. So I just want to start right there. Is this symptomatic of the entire culture? And what are we to make of this? How should we frame what just was decided?
Yeah, so the case dealt with, it's called 303 Creative versus, I forget the defendant, I think it's the state of Colorado. It involved a conflict between you know, mentioned gay marriage, and of course it did involve a individual who owned this website. She was owned a business that designed websites, and she, as a devout Christian, said that she could not in any way cooperate with or create something honoring a same-sex marriage. And she also included other sorts of activity, just, you know, racial bigotry, violence, all sorts of other things that she could not participate in. But sexual orientation is a protected class in the state of Colorado, as it is with as many other states, and a protected class within something called public accommodations. That is, if you have a business, let's say you sell, you have a grocery store or a clothier, you can't deny business to someone based on a whole array of characteristics, including religion, sexual orientation, race, nationality, gender, etc. So she made the argument that even though her objection to same-sex marriage is motivated by her religion, ultimately the job of creating a website or in designing is a form of expression. And so she didn't appeal to the free exercise clause of the First Amendment, which is the clause that says that the government cannot interfere with religious free exercise in any direct way. She appealed to the part of the Constitution that dealt with freedom of speech or freedom of expression. And so in a good way to think about it is this way. Imagine a gay website designer approached by the Westboro Baptist Church. Westboro Baptist Church is a very vehement anti-gay church. Not only do they object to homosexuality, they go to the funerals of fallen soldiers who've defended this country, saying that because you defended this country, you're a wicked person because this is a wicked country, and they hurl epithets at the funerals of these individuals. So at the relatives that are present there. I mean, that, let's suppose you had a gay website designer who said, look, I don't want to design a website for the Westboro Baptist Church. This case protects him from that kind of coercion by the state, because after all, Westboro Baptist is a church and religion is a protected class. So if we're going to coerce this young woman who is the web designer, then we could also coerce, the government could also coerce the gay web designer as well. And I think anyone wants to live in a country where people cannot express their views, or in which the government itself coerces citizens to assert things that they don't believe in. That seems to me to be so fundamental to the character of this country that I think the only reason why you're hearing portrayals of this case in such a distorted fashion is because if it were presented in an accurate fashion, people would say, well, what's the big deal? This is kind of just what we've always believed.
Okay, I'm so happy that you kind of set the table there for us, because the rhetoric is extreme in this regard, as if a new right is being carved out. As a matter of fact, The Hill, you know, the news source of Washington D.C., one of the news sources, a new and mysterious constitutional right to discriminate. That's a headline that they have. So I mean, we want to have a conversation. We don't just want to have an argument, but I don't know where to begin a conversation if that is the reaction to what the Supreme Court decided.
Yeah, it's, I mean, a couple of things go through my mind when I hear about headlines like the one in The Hill and several commentators that I've heard and read about online. Either they just didn't read the opinion, or they did read it and couldn't comprehend it, or they read it and comprehended it, are not telling the truth intentionally. I mean, those are really the only option, the options we have. And I understand, you know, I hold strong views, as I'm sure most of your listeners do, on a variety of matters, and I want people to ultimately agree with me, and I try to persuade them. But I think to have a conversation where we all agree that the truth is important, we have to be honest with each other, right?
I mean, right, right.
This is the thing that I think really is infuriating, is not that people disagree or don't think that the court reasoned the right way, but that they present it, it's just not what the opinion said. I mean, think of, there's a case back that's actually cited a couple of times in 303 Creative by Justice Gorsuch, who wrote the majority. It's a case called West Virginia versus Barnett. West Virginia versus Barnett was a case involving a Jehovah's Witness kids that were in an elementary school in West Virginia who refused to salute the flag and utter the Pledge of Allegiance because under Jehovah's Witness theology, that is a form of idolatry. They believe that to pledge your allegiance to the flag is in fact to make a commitment to something less than God. Now, you know, there are reasons that we may reject the Jehovah's Witness view from a theological perspective, but the Supreme Court winds up ruling in favor of the kids. Imagine at the time, in 1943, the headline read, Supreme Court supports unpatriotic citizens who won't fight Hitler. Right? I mean, that's all technically true, right? Because Jehovah's Witnesses are pacifists. They won't fight anybody. Right? So, but here's the point. That would be a technically, at least it would be technically, first off, it wouldn't be accurate that they're unpatriotic, right? So if you would frame a case of coerced speech, that's what Justice Robert Jackson wrote the majority in that case said. This is a case of coerced speech. Even though they're motivated by religion, the government can't force people to affirm beliefs that they disagree with. And so, but if a paper at the time had framed it as unpatriotic citizens who won't fight Hitler, supported by the Supreme Court, that would be a distortion of what actually happened. And I think you're getting a version of that
here
today, yeah, with what you read about in The Hill.
Francis Beckwith is our guest. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back. Your questions are welcome. You want to talk about the church and state? You want to talk about freedom of religion? That's what we're going to talk about right now in this show before the 4th of July. 888-318-7884.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
If it's central to the faith, you can find it on EWTN Podcast Central, featuring the best of EWTN radio, as well as faith-filled podcasts from our friends and affiliates across the nation, all in one place, all free. The destination for great Catholic audio programming is EWTN Podcast Central. It's like podcast heaven. Visit EWTN.com/radio/podcasts today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Dr. Francis Beckwith. If you'd like to meet him in person and hear what he has to say, he will be one of the featured speakers at our Catholic Answers Conference in September. You can check it all out at CatholicAnswersConference.com. CatholicAnswersConference.com. I can remember as a 13-year-old, Dr. Beckwith, the Nazis wanted to march in Skokie, Illinois. And this paralyzed the country for a few weeks while courts tried to decide. And it seems to me since then, you know, since 13, every, I don't know, 15 or 20 years, we have to relitigate free speech and freedom of religion and all of that. And so in a certain sense, I think right now, because of the Obergefell decision, we're just having to work out, okay, what are the implications? And by the way, the Nazis did march in Skokie, Illinois, and it was horrific because many Holocaust survivors lived there. Mm-hmm. But the courts found, just because you don't like it, you can't tell people that they can't fly their Nazi flag. And yeah. And the Nazis, you know, well, I guess I was going to say are clearly a lot worse than this website maker. But I don't think many people, I think there's people that don't believe that. I think they think a Christian website maker who won't do a gay wedding site is probably worse than those Nazis. Why do you think that we have come to this fraught moment where what used to be so clear, this religious freedom and First Amendment protection, seems so frail again? Why do you think we have come to this moment?
You know, I think it has a lot to do with just the nature of the culture wars in this country, in the sense that you have, in order to achieve certain goals, certain rhetoric had to be used. That is, in order to achieve something like Obergefell, individuals who were skeptical of same-sex marriage, who held traditional views, are bigots and, you know, evil and so forth. And I'm not, you know, the old-fashioned way of like dealing with an issue like this was to, especially since it involves a question of sexual morality, the sort of typical old-fashioned liberal view of dealing with an issue like this would be people from different points of view and different traditions hold reasonable perspectives, and we have to figure out how to get along in a country of deep disagreement, that sort of thing. Now, there are flaws in that approach, to be sure. I've actually written critical pieces against that form of liberalism, but at least that form of liberalism had the virtue of understanding that not everybody who doesn't hold, let's say, permissive views on sexuality or holds traditional views on moral theology are monsters, you know. And that's, so the problem is the rhetoric is used to get that goal. That is to say, the only thing that will fulfill justice is to have something like same-sex marriage codified in our Constitution. But then we have at least half the country, maybe a little less, a little more, who are ambivalent about this, right? They may actually think that, you know, as you said at the very beginning of the program, yeah, the Supreme Court has made its decision, there's no turning back. But we also live in a country where people hold views about sexual morality that are so deeply ingrained in their religious traditions, and they don't arise from any sort of animus against gay people or anything like that. It's just what people believe has not only been revealed to them by God, but is also good for us as human beings. It's the way our nature is ordered. Again, there are going to be citizens who think that's crazy. It's a mistaken view. But in a free society, you know, you're just going to bound to have people that hold these different views, right? So the problem is the rhetoric that gets us there says that most of the country holds irredeemably wicked views about homosexuality, and that has to be stamped out. On the other hand, though, you saw for most of that fight a kind of libertarian defense of intimacy, right? You know, whatever consenting adults do is nobody else's business. The government should stay out of the bedroom. Marriage is just a piece of paper, right? All this sort of kind of libertine views. And so at some point, something's got to give. You can't have this kind of high moralism about anyone who agrees with you and at the same time use rhetoric, at least early on in the revolution, that asserts that, you know, live and let live, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I do think that we're seeing it cast out in the courts right now. And that's why I think that the 303 case is it seems to be a kind of ordinary American free speech case to me. It just doesn't seem that.
Yeah.
Radical. And yet, I do think if you have lived for the past two decades on a steady diet of anyone who doesn't agree with the piety to the sexual revolution, it's a completely wicked, evil person, you're going to come to believe that the owner of 303 Creative is really bad.
Yeah, you know? Right. That's right. So, but and what you said, though, is that, like, if my religious beliefs include an understanding of homosexual sex acts as immoral, those don't arise from a hatred of gay people or an animosity. But many people, they don't have... and I actually got this idea from you, so I'm turning it back to you. So I don't want to take credit for the question, but yeah. But the, as a matter of fact, because the idea of the question comes from your own statements, but there's many, many people in the country today who have no experience of religion. And so when I say I have my religion gives birth to this morality, and this morality says, no, those acts are not moral acts, the person cannot understand that because they don't know what religion is or what it does.
Yeah, that's right. I also think along the same lines that they also tend to think that anything connected to religion is by its very nature not rational. Oh, even though they may not, although they may not explicitly think it, it's presupposed. I'll give you one example of how I encountered this type of thinking about almost 20 years ago now. I was speaking at Texas Tech University Law School in Lubbock, and I'd given a talk on issues in theology, science, and law. And afterwards, one of the professors, not from the law school, but from one of the sciences, who was in the audience, raised his hand and he said, all you've given us are religious arguments. And it was weird because the arguments I gave were just about the law. That was, although I dealt with how the law dealt with conflicts between theology and science and public school in the public school context. Well, he asserts, all you've given us are religious arguments. And I paused for a moment and I said, wow, I'm relieved. I thought you were going to say I had given you bad arguments. And he kind of looked at me and I said, well, see what you've done. You've assumed that if I had given you just arguments, that they just weren't even worthy of assessment. And I think part of the problem is that that especially on issues of human sexuality, and especially for those of us who are Catholic, the Catholic view is that, yes, Scripture reveals to us how we ought to conduct our lives concerning intimacy, but also natural reason can be helpful as well. And so for this reason, you find, even outside of Christianity, their Catholicism, philosophical arguments about fidelity in marriage, how to treat children. This is why Jesus, when he's preaching, he says to his audience, a good father would not give his son a loaf of bread and say that it's a scorpion, right? Well, he's kind of assuming that they know what good parents are, right?
Right.
So there's a kind of, even Jesus is kind of using natural reason. So in any event, it may be just because we're Catholic, we tend to think, and I think rightly, that there are things that we can only know through special revelation. There are things that we can know through reason, and there are things that kind of overlap. So I think issues of sexuality are those issues where we kind of have intuitions about the wrongness of adultery and the misuse of our sexual power. Sometimes that can be suppressed or distorted by how we grew up or our life experience. So we need revelation to help us to clarify it, right? So Scripture tells us that you shouldn't commit adultery, divorce is wrong, and so forth. Something you probably couldn't get through directly through natural reason that easily.
Right. I think many people, now in the decade after all the battles over gay marriage, those of us who argued and continue to argue that marriage is between a man and a woman, it's rooted in the nature of human beings and joining the sexes and procreating children and all of that, we lost everywhere, except in Africa, we lost everywhere. So now I think it feels to us like we're not so much fighting for marriage as for a place in the world that has rejected our view of marriage. We might accept that defeat and say, okay, we got our tail handed to us everywhere, but we still want to live in this world with our beliefs. Do you think that's actually what's happening? That we lost and now we're fighting for our place?
I think that's right. I think there's a couple of things that we're not only fighting for our place, we're also fighting for our institutions, our way of life. So one of the, I think, encouraging things about recent Supreme Court decisions is that the court recognizes that that religious institutions do in fact have a right to conduct their affairs in a way to advance their beliefs. And
well, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll take some calls and we'll continue the conversation. Catholic Answers Live with Dr. Francis Beckwith. Want to get right to the core of Christ's saving message? Want a roadmap for living the life Christ calls you to? It's time to look again at the Beatitudes. In his new book, Heart of the Gospel, How the Beatitudes Show Us God's Plan for Happiness, Father Sebastian Walsh demonstrates compellingly how these eight declarations make up the foundation, the essence, and the final goal of Jesus' teaching. Heart of the Gospel illuminates the scriptural passages from which we get the Beatitudes, explains the significance of their wording, their order, and their timing in Jesus' ministry. And it draws out edifying parallels and connections with salvation history and the lives of the saints. Most importantly, Father Walsh offers wise counsel from his own work as a priest and teacher to help you live the Beatitudes in your own life. Order your copy of Heart of the Gospel today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. So happy to get to talk with Dr. Francis Beckwith from Baylor University, who has done all kinds of thinking and writing and speaking about the very issues that we're talking, in addition to many other things, about the issues that we're talking about today. And as we're on the cusp of the 4th of July, religious freedom, religious liberty, freedom of speech. These are, the First Amendment kind of smushes a whole bunch of rights into one amendment, but they do kind of seem to have a relation to one another. They're not unrelated. If I don't have the right to free speech, for example, I really don't have religious freedom.
That's right. In fact, some of the most significant cases the Supreme Court has dealt with have been cases where the government has limited religious speech in a context where they wouldn't limit speech about other matters. It's sometimes called viewpoint discrimination. Mm-hmm. And the court has consistently said, look, as long as the state is not the actor, the private actor, the fact that it's religious speech should not be singled out for special burden. And so, yeah, there's a whole bunch of cases arising from the 1980s up into this present one in 303 Creative that we were talking about earlier. There are all these cases where, yes, religious citizen or religious speech is involved, but ultimately it's decided because it's just speech.
888-318-7884, the number. I could easily monopolize the whole hour with our guest, Dr. Francis Beckwith, but I do want to go to callers. If you'd like to be one of those callers, just dial that number, 888-318-7884. We're talking about religious liberty. Let's go to Jim in Greenbelt, Maryland, watching on YouTube. Jim, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Beckwith.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. in protecting that right of to not have the state compel us to speak, then I guess the price for that that we would be willing to accept is that the web designer whose religion tells him that interracial marriage is wrong wouldn't have to design a web page for an interracial couple, but that's an acceptable cost, would you say?
I think so. I mean, right now, that web designer could actually create a website in which he or she advocates against interracial marriage. That's perfectly consistent with perfectly consistent with freedom of speech. I think that if now, of course, I think the market's going to take care of a person like that. They get a reputation for not hosting a site or designing it. Remember, it's not a question of a product that is just being taken off the shelf or is simply being downloaded. It's actual designing of a site, and that's where it differs. So, we can turn that around, right? So, I used earlier the example of a gay web designer who was is approached by the Westboro Baptist Church, who is notorious for their use of anti-gay slurs and so forth, and he could, I think, easily under the free speech clause, decline to create that site. Why? Because it is speech. And Westboro Baptist is just as much a protected class as a gay couple that may want to hire 303 Creative. Religion is just as much a protected class, sexual orientation. So, yeah, I mean, one of the prices that we pay in a free society, especially with freedom of speech, is that we have to tolerate speech that we think is immoral. We obviously tolerate speech that we think is correct, right? We just don't tolerate it. We embrace it. But that's just the price. Now, it would be different if, let's say a web designer who was a racist said, I'm not going to serve black people. That would be completely different, because there it would be the individual's status rather than anything they wanted to communicate on the site. That's the difference. One is status, the other is speech. And that's the distinction that Justice Gorsuch makes in the 303 Creative majority opinion.
Jim, I wonder what you think about that.
That's good. And then for a scenario like a company that says we won't sell homeowners insurance to interracial couples, that wouldn't fall under this, because that's more that's a matter of expression.
Okay. Yeah. And I want to just clarify something. This doesn't mean there aren't difficult cases or borderline cases, right? So there could be a case, a scenario I actually have thought up, because my wife is a stained glass artist. Supposing she makes like 20 stained glass panels of the Virgin Mary, and so she sells them off the shelf, and then someone comes in to her shop from the First Church of Satan and says, I want to buy one to put behind the altar at my satanic temple. And so that's there's intuitions I have that would be that my wife would have a right to decline service on, and those kind of off the shelf. So I don't, but I think there are, as a legal scholar, I mean, I have to, be forthright. There are going to be just some cases that are going to be difficult, but I don't think 303 Creative was a difficult one.
Jim, thank you very, very much for the call. The number is 888-318-7884. Our guest is Dr. Francis Beckwith. We're talking about religious liberty. There are people today who are baffled by the idea of religious liberty, because they don't, as you were talking about before, they don't understand why religion should have any place in society that's different from, say, the grocery store or the post office.
Yeah, it's actually in the literature, the academic literature over the past 15 or 20 years, there's arisen this view that actually questions why we should treat religion as special. And I think one of the reasons why that's arisen is because of the rise of the nuns, that is N-O-N-E-S, people that are unaffiliated. They may believe in God, but they're not, they really don't have any deep religious commitments. It's actually forced a lot of us to have to think about why, what is it that makes religion special? And I think ultimately, if we look at within the Catholic tradition, so one of the great declarations of the Catholic Church was issued at the Second Vatican Council called Dignitatis Humanae. And in it, the emphasis on, well, what is it about religion? Why should we have religion? It's because human beings are ordered towards the transcendent. That is, we have a desire to situate ourselves and have right relation with that which is greater than us. And I actually think you see this to a certain extent in secular movements in which people seem so committed that it's analogous to religion. So you often hear this, from folks, historians sometimes say this, that the early Bolsheviks were committed to Marxism as if it were religion. Right, they're willing to die for it. So I think what religion is ultimately, we see this not only in Christianity, but all the major religions, there's a understanding of having a right relation to that which is transcendent, that which is the source of all being. And that's what the American founders believed. If you go to some of the early documents by folks like Jefferson and Madison, they often talk about religion having a duty to God. And so one of the reasons why we have not only a First Amendment, but in all the states, provisions for religious liberty is because everyone at the time believed that clearly there were religious differences. People had belonged to different denominations. There were individuals in the early states that were not even Christian, but there was an understanding that every human being had a duty to God and that it's not the role of the government to make judgments as to which way is the right way. So, but if in fact you don't, let's say, grow up with that, let's say connected to some religious group, or do not grow up in a religious home, or just unacquainted with religion, you're right, it's going to seem mysterious as to why anyone would, why should we single out religion for special protection? And I think we see actually issues like in marriage. So even though, you know, we've had the revolution of same-sex marriage, marriage itself has diminished in significance, right? So it used to be illegal to commit adultery. I think, still on the books, laws, tort laws for alienation of affection. You could, let's say your spouse cheats on you, you can sue the person who they cheated with for damages. That was part of the basically, it was like marriage is so serious, marriage is so important, that, and children and the upbringing of children in a safe home in which the parents stay married is so important, our laws are going to make it really difficult to break it. And then what happens is the 60s occur, 70s and into the 80s, and we get no-fault divorce and the proliferation of the sexual revolution. And so people start asking questions like, well, why should it matter whether a child is born within marriage or not?
Yeah. And now, right? Look, so what we've got. So, now most children are.
So that's right. So what happens? So there's like, once you start, it's like an ad. Like once you start thinking, once you start saying, start raising questions about why should we single out certain institutions, ways of life is more important than others because it seems unfair or against equality. And initially, I think people's reactions or belief on this are motivated maybe from a quasi good place. You know, they don't want people to feel marginalized and so forth, but they don't understand why the institutions are the way they are. They're ultimately the way they are for our own good. Because human, yeah, go ahead.
I just want to ask about the other side of it, though, because more and more I hear from Catholics, including young Catholics, not old fogies, which I use that term advisedly, but from young fogies who say, Dr. Beckwith, why are you even talking about religious freedom or religious liberty? These aren't Catholic words. These are not words. This is not a way of speaking that comes from Catholic theology. You're using Enlightenment terminology.
Yeah. Well, I've heard that question many times over the past 5 or 6 years. You have a younger generation of Catholics, most of whom were born in late 80s through early 90s, who are sort of coming of age now. They're starting families, and they have lived under the ravages of a kind of hyper-liberalism. Many of them have seen the devastation of the sexual revolution, and they say, if this is liberalism, I don't want any part of it.
Yeah.
I want to live in a society that protects these goods. But here's the thing, is that we had religious liberty in the United States long before the 1960s. It's been around since, at least in the U.S., since the end of the 18th century. And America was a pretty traditional country up until the late 1960s. And so a lot of the laws that, and let's say customs that these young people wish we had, were part of the infrastructure of a nation that had robust religious liberty and at the same time stood up for those goods of life and marriage and family. And it was reflected in our law. So I understand where these young people are coming from, and I hear some of their misgivings about contemporary liberalism, but I don't think you can put it at the feet of, you know, religious liberty. In fact, I mentioned earlier Dignitatis Humanae. In that document, which some of these young people criticize, one of the things that the fathers say, that religious liberty is not absolute, and that governments can cabin religious liberty based on goods of the natural law. So what we see today in terms of this kind of libertinism is not necessarily, you don't need it in order to have religious liberty.
888-318-7884 on this 4th of July weekend, talking about religious liberty with Dr. Francis Beckwith, who has thought more deeply and consistently about this than most of us have. And if you've got a question for him, we'd love to have your call. 888-318-7884.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN's religious catalog has great summer reading for kids. In God's Glorious Girl, young girls will hear the truth about who God created them to be from the very beginning of their lives. This book will help build a foundation of faith and confidence in God for each girl who hears these words. For more, visit EWTNRC.com today.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Coming up in September, the last full weekend of September, we'll have our Catholic Answers Conference. Our guest is Dr. Francis Beckwith, who will be there. And you can come and visit with him and hear what he has to say. We're going to be talking about God. Well, I guess part of the conversation we're having this hour is indicative of the fact that God is forgotten in many places, and how to wake up the world and remind the world and help the world to remember God. That's what we're going to talk about. You can join us. CatholicAnswersConference.com is where you can get all the information. CatholicAnswersConference.com. Now all the callers are coming. Caleb in Illinois, listening on 92.5 FM. Thank you for your call, Caleb. We're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Beckwith.
Question, Dr. Beckwith, is how do we prevent abuses of religious liberty? And what I mean by that is, I'm thinking of a couple of examples. During COVID, we saw people claiming religious liberty as a reason not to be vaccinated. But we also see it now with abortion, where people who are claiming, whether they are or not, actually to be Satanists, and then they have the right to abort based on that. And those, I'm sure there are others. Those are just a couple examples. But how do we help to prevent abuses of, or frauds of religious liberty, if you will?
Caleb, great question. Thank you.
Yeah. So religious liberty, as I mentioned earlier when I was talking about dignitas humanae, but the same thing is true of American law. Religious liberty is not absolute. The government can pass laws that advance what it believes is good. So, for example, our laws forbid, let's say, a parent from tossing their child into a volcano because they want to worship Baal, right? Or things like that. How do we prevent, like you used the specific examples. So with, you know, with the example of the vaccination, I mean, there it's going to be really a matter of the facts on the ground. So most governments and most institutions allow people to be exempted for conscientious objection for vaccinations. And I'm not sure, you know, it's going to depend on the level of, if it's a pandemic, the level of the harm if a sufficient amount of people are not vaccinated. It's going to matter in terms of the risk that people may take if they in fact accept the vaccination. So one of the things that if you ever read or get involved in American jurisprudence concerning religion is that there is no like one size fits all for cases like this. So typically what a court will do, the Supreme Court will do, if the government, let's say, were to require that all citizens be vaccinated without mentioning religion, supposing, and it turns out there are some citizens that have religious objections to vaccination, the court will then ask the government if it's, let's say, a federal law. There's actually different ways of evaluating a law, whether it's federal or state. But if it's a federal law, what will kick in is something called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And the government would have to prove that it has a compelling interest in requiring every single person to be vaccinated. And that's a pretty high burden. So they're just going to depend on the facts on the ground. It's going to depend on whether it's a state or a federal law. Now, in terms of the other example you used about the use of religious freedom to justify abortion rights, that is going to be, I think that's the next horizon in religious liberty in terms of the pro-abortion side is going to start, they've already started using that argument here. States that craft laws that limit abortion have to be really careful that they explain why they're prohibiting abortion and why they're allowing certain exceptions, because what will happen is a court will say, if you give an exception that, let's say, for life of the mother, why can't you give an exception for religion? And of course, the state have a pretty easy case to say, well, we have a compelling interest for life of the mother. More difficult is going to be severe disability. Supposing a state says abortion is banned except for severe disability or life of the mother. It's going to be difficult for the state to make the argument that that they can't, that they won't be able to give the religious exemption. So states have to be really careful. So the other angle is how sincere is this religious claim? So if in fact there's evidence that the Church of Satan have just concocted this theology to challenge the law, then courts could throw it out as being insincere. It's going to depend if state argues that we are affirming the right to life for unborn human beings based on the fact that unborn human beings are persons, then it's going to be more difficult for, you know, a religious claim to a right to abortion, because the same person could claim, well, you know, religion says that it's okay to kill my five-year-old, right? So I have to get an exemption for homicide laws. No court is going to accept that. So it's going to get pretty complicated over the next 5 or 6 years in terms of the courts, and we'll be arguing out of board, I think, for some time to come.
And it's harder to arrive at or to settle these very difficult cases when the there's not goodwill on either side. I mean, there's just bad will all around, or I don't know if bad will is there, but certainly a bad mood all around. It's very hard to settle an argument when everyone's in a bad mood.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Caleb, does that satisfy what you were looking for?
Yeah, that was a phenomenal answer. Thank you very much.
That's what you get with Dr. Francis Beckwith. We're not playing around here. It's fantastic answers or no answers at all. Walt, in Pennsylvania, you got to be quick if you'd like an answer from Dr. Beckwith, because we are getting near the end. Go ahead, Walt.
Yep. Block abortion mill doors, and when we were being taken away, on the other side used to shout out, here are the Christians, where are the lions? They still have that attitude. When are we going to understand that they really want to put us in jail or kill us, and we need to fight back hard?
Dr. Beckwith?
Yeah, well, I don't think everyone who thinks we're wrong wants to put us in jail and throw away the key. Yeah, there are people out there who really despise the Catholic Church and its doctrines and its beliefs. But there are other people that just simply disagree with us who I think we can dialogue with. So it's a complicated world out there, and not everybody who thinks we're wrong thinks we're evil.
But the stakes are very high for everyone. I mean, one of the things we talked about earlier is that part of, since the Obergefell decision, which I have to say, I think a lot of Christians resent that we were told, this has nothing to do with you, it's other people getting married, it's not going to have any effect in your life. And we said, of course it's going to have effect on our schools, on our free speech and all that. And they said, no, it's not. And now it is. Yeah. I think there's a huge resentment about that. But getting past the resentment, we do.
Yeah.
I mean, there are basic issues of what can you say, what can you not say, what's protected and what's not protected, that now have to be worked out in the light of this revolution.
That's right. And I think, yeah, I think it was disingenuous when people gave us that answer. I think some of them sincerely believed it, but I think there were others that realized that law has a particular logic to it. You can't change one part of the law without it affecting other aspects of the law, especially a thing as important as marriage. If you think of the law as a kind of organism, and if you, let's say, plant a virus in the organism, it's going to affect the whole organism. And so once you change marriage, then things like presumption of paternity, that is, that the assumption that any child that arrives as a result of a union is part of that union. Well, if you have a same-sex couple, what's presumption of paternity?
Right. Yeah.
So there's all sorts of things like that I don't know if anyone thought about, like, that just runs right through the law.
I'll tell you what this hour has done. I'm more excited than ever about the Catholic Answers Conference. Really looking forward to meeting you there and hearing what you have to say. And I'm very grateful that you did this hour on 4th of July weekend, where we could reflect a little bit on where we are with religious liberty.
Thank you for having me. Look forward to going to San Diego.
Dr. Francis Beckwith has been our guest. I'll say it again, CatholicAnswersConference.com if you want to come to the conference. Hey, tomorrow we got a great show for you. Don't miss it. Don't get so caught up with hot dogs that you miss us. See you then. God willing. Catholic Answers Live.